Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacey
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Ross.
Here we go now.
I am going to repeat myself till I'm blue in the face, but it's because we have two different draft previews. So these are not players you are taking at number 16. We're going to get back to that preview probably Thursday. We have a short show tomorrow, an abbreviated show. And those are guys like Bump has looked at Troy Fautanu, Brock Bowers was the other day, that the Seahawks could maybe take at 16. It doesn't always mean they're going to fall to them. It might even mean they pass on them. But these are guys that Bump has looked at as first rounders. This is a separate preview called Drafting Seahawks. What this is looking at guys that fit the mold of what the Seahawks have liked in the past. Maybe they have the right character. Maybe they've got some raw talent. Or in the specific instance of today's draft, they are passers that don't require a ton of draft capital to acquire. So let's get to today's Drafting Seahawks. With pick number whatever on probably day three. FSU quarterback Jordan Travis and or Tennessee's Joe Milton. We're going to get to both. Let's start with Jordan, who is an undersized passer. Bump, we have seen John Schneider and Pete, though he won't be with him this time around, draft an undersized passer before.
Yeah, and he was smaller than this guy, too. Jordan Travis, 6'1", 200 pounds. When you put on the film of Jordan Travis, the first thing you're going to recognize is his mobility. And not even just running down the field. It's buying time. It's something that NFL GMs fall in love with. Can you buy time? Can you do those off-schedule throws? And what do those throws look like? I've watched the tape on this young man. He could be rolling to the right, throwing across his body. The arm still looks good. The velocity on the ball is still good. He could be falling backwards, throwing the back shoulder to the sideline. The ball still looks good. The velocity still looks good. Also, he is tough. There were several times against LSU, I believe they played, where he is getting smacked underneath the chin. They're not throwing a flag because everyone loves LSU, and he gets himself back up, and he does his thing. In 2022, he had 417 rushing yards. In 2023, in 10 games, 11 games he played in, he had 173 yards. Are you ready for this take I'm about to say?
I don't know.
All right. If he doesn't get hurt, he's the Drake May of this draft. Everyone's falling in love with Drake May, his athletic ability, the way he throws the football.
What a fun take.
If this young man does not get hurt, he's that fifth quarterback that everybody is talking about and falling in love with. And honestly, I would fall in love more with Jordan Travis than I have with Drake May.
Why?
Just his accuracy is a lot better. His understanding of what he's looking at is a lot better. And don't get me wrong, man. I've been talking about Drake May. He is a good college quarterback.
I think
he could go to the NFL
and
be fine, right? But there are things, the inconsistencies, him not getting the football off in time. His accuracy has been jacked up. The thing that saves him is that he's athletic. He might be a bit more athletic than Jordan Travis, but Jordan Travis has more of that down-the-field type of speed. We have seen 25-yard gains, 15-yard gains, 10-yard gains out of Jordan Travis. Also, he's good in the zone option. He's good in the RPO. Over his career, he's averaging 5 yards per carry. You're looking at Jordan Travis, and you're saying, this could be one of those late-round draft picks, finds himself on a team, sits for a year or two, gets an opportunity, and you never know what's going to happen. But again, if he doesn't get hurt, these guys get into the college football playoffs, right? Who knows? Maybe they win a game and get to the national championship, you're looking at him different. What if, and that's what helped J.J. McCarthy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's from a good program, a pro-style offense. They didn't ask him to do much. He ran the football. But what got him to the mountaintop? He's winning ball games. Mm-hmm. He got to the natty. If Jordan Travis does that same thing, we're talking about him different. If he doesn't get hurt, we're talking about him different. They were undefeated, FSU. I don't care what their schedule looked like. It's hard to go undefeated in any sport. So I'm looking at Jordan Travis, and I'm saying somebody might find themselves a diamond in the rough with this young man. He would be the Drake May of this draft if he doesn't get hurt.
20 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, as you mentioned, through those 11 games. 11-0, undefeated team. Before he fractured his ankle late in the season, November 18th. Again, one of the unspoken conspiracy theories is that that's the reason Florida State wasn't one of the chosen schools. And you can make like your ACC kind of complaint, but that's how impactful he was to this team, how important he was to this team, not just as a quarterback, but as one who performs. If we are all as Seahawks fans watching the draft and it's day three and we see John Schneider make this pick of Jordan Travis, what's your immediate reaction? Is it, hey, you're taking a flyer on a quarterback, throw something at the wall, see what sticks kind of move?
Nah, he's He was, if he gets picked, they're planning. They're looking towards the future. Jordan is not a guy you just bring in to see what happens. Jordan is a guy, well, all picks you bring in and see what happens. But Jordan is a guy that you can see running your offense, that you are expecting to challenge the number two receiver. Again, undefeated. They were undefeated before my man got hurt. So, no, if they were to bring in Jordan Travis, now I'm looking at Sam Howell and saying, all right, man, you got a real competition. They bring in anybody outside of Jordan. Am I saying the same right? Goodness gracious.
Jordan Travis?
Jordan Travis. Like, mm-hmm. I want to say.
You know what?
I want to say Travis Jordan so bad.
That makes sense. maybe it's Travis Scott. Anytime people have two first names, I always mess them up.
Jackson,
I think it's Jordan's fault.
But it's his dad or mom's fault.
Yeah.
Oh, but if you bring him in, you're not expecting him just to be a camp arm and see what happens. You're legit investing in him and seeing what he's capable of. There are some draft picks, man, you get to round 6, 7. And you know, guys are just brought in because we got to draft somebody. Right. We got all of our needs. We need another quarterback. We need a camp arm. We'll see what happens. He is not that. If he is with the Seahawks, you never know. I doubt it, but you never know. If he is with the Seahawks, Sam Howell's in a real competition. And if he loses that competition, now Sam Howell is going to be trade bait for anybody who loses a quarterback during training camp or just needs a legit number two quarterback who's been there and who's done that. I really like this dude. It was so sad to see him go down the way he went down because, man, his stock was rising and FSU would have been in the college football playoff.
And he publicly apologized to his team. And it wasn't his fault at all. They should have been in the playoff, but he apologized to his team for getting hurt, which is like, oh, it's not your fault, man. Like, you could just tell he was heartbroken. I felt so bad for him, and he was so important for their season and really fun to watch. And like any undersized quarterback and a quarterback coming off a serious injury, I think that analysts, scouts are wondering, like, can he succeed at the NFL level? There's plenty of question marks outside of just size. And then also, will in any way his recent injury hold him back from some workouts and acclimating very quickly to the league? Let's get to our next quarterback. Tennessee's Joe Milton. You want to go from one undersized quarterback with Jordan Travis at 6'1", 200. Let's go ahead and jump to 6'5", Joe Milton coming in at 235.
It's a big boy right here, 6'5", 235. He actually started his college career at Michigan. He was there for 3 years. Didn't like the situation, so he goes over to Tennessee. Was the starter for Tennessee, but then he gets banged up. Then Hendon Hooker takes over. We all know Hendon Hooker. He got hurt towards the end of his college career. He is now with the Detroit Lions, probably next up over there. When you turn on the film of Joe Milton, the first thing you're going to see is just he's a massive human being. If you do not wrap him up, there's no arm tackling this guy. You got to wrap him up and drive him to the ground. And his balance is that good. When you are 6'5", 235, I would imagine his squat game is on point. I would imagine his clean game is on point, power clean, hand clean, whatever you want to do. He's got it. He is he's a prototype when you look at his size,
yes.
But he's still in development. There's still some things that he needs to work on. I mentioned the good parts. He has good balance. He's hard to take down. Another thing he needs to work on are his touch throws. When you're that massive of a human being, power is your game. Finesse is something that I think you learn once you get more reps and you have more experience and guys coach you up. But he can make the throws when he is set in that pocket and he gets to that back foot and he lets it go. My man has a rocket. And it's crazy because every quarterback in this draft, I think you can say the same thing about them when it comes to just they're mobile.
That's how you got here.
They can move.
Yeah.
You know, like no longer are you going to get a guy, a high draft pick at the quarterback spot where he's just standing in a quarterback like a Peyton Manning and just the smartest guy out there. Those guys are still out there, but just like every other position is evolving, the quarterback position is evolving, and Joe Milton is a perfect example of that. He's a project. He's a guy that you bring in late in the draft, and you say, let's see what he can do.
Mm-hmm.
How can he acclimate to the NFL game? Is he going to be coachable? Because he's got all the physical, needs to work on his touch passes a little bit, but, man, guys and GMs, head coaches, OCs, fall in love with size. You cannot teach 6'5", 235 with a strong arm. You can teach a touch throw. You can teach being patient. You can teach getting the ball out on time. I think another thing, he'll hold on to the ball a bit longer than he should because he knows he has the arm to do that. And in college football, you can get away with that. You can wait, because one, I know this safety is not going to light me up because I'm a big boy. Two, I know I got the arm to get it 45, 50 yards down the field when I should be around 35, 40 yards down the field. It's a gift and a curse being 6'5", 235 because you can get away with some stuff in college. Next level, you got to mature a little bit. I think he can do it, but he's a guy you bring in and say, all right, let's see if he can compete.
The Seahawks have been willing to, I think, take risks on players that are like rare physical specimens but underdeveloped or very raw. I mean, very different obviously different positions, but even then, different players, different profiles, different backgrounds. And I would say Reek covers more ground here, but it's like Reek Woolen. Like, they took him in the fifth round because they were like, this guy has unbelievable length, unbelievable speed, unbelievable size. He's just still figuring out how to play corner. And that's what made him a fifth rounder, but they took a flyer on him. That's kind of what, to me, Joe Milton falls into is a body, like you said, height and size that you can't teach, and also everything that comes along with that, without the finesse of a passer. And this one line from Greg Zuerlein's profile concerned me, quote, a disturbing lack of placement and timing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't want to hear disturbing lack of placement as a critique for a passer.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's there. And he says, the Athletic says, otherwise he has the physical tools that scream first round pick.
Yeah, he's on paper. He's first rounder all day. In reality, he is a project. And the worst thing as a receiver. Now, I tell my guys, my saying is, you touch it, you buy it. Right? If you touch that football, you come down with it, you have to catch it. The worst thing as a receiver is you are running a 5 yard shallow going across the field and that quarterback just fires it in on you like, dog, dog, I'm only 5 yards across the line of scrimmage. Like, goodness gracious, put a little touch on that thing. Let me get upfield and get after it. So, yes, but as receivers, especially professional receivers, it don't matter. You catch the football. But it is a pain in the you-know-what when you're done with a quarterback who does not believe in touch at all. One of the guys I play with, Gary Rogers, man, he's from Mukilteo, 6'5 quarterback. He had to learn that touch. If you guys remember, Gary got into the game against Auburn in 2007, took us down the field because he had the rocket arm and could make those throws against SEC Auburn. But as he progressed, he had to put some touch on it. We used to be like, Gary, bro, we know you're strong.
Yeah.
We know you're 6'5".
Yeah.
Just put a little touch on that thing. Let us run after the catch. But he is something that an OC has to fall in love with and just be enamored by all the things he does well. Because the things that he does well might outweigh the bad when it's all said and done. But just like in any sport, any position, you got to get the right coach, right environment, right system, right receivers. And that's what all these quarterbacks in this draft. But the further you get down when it comes to being ranked as a quarterback, the more important that thing is because your opportunities are going to be limited.
Mm-hmm. Do you see specifically the you know, placement and touch and things like that as being you have it or you don't, or as being something that you've maybe once in a while seen a quarterback develop? And I don't think that this is the case with Josh Allen. His big critique was he's got all the arm strength in the world. He can make these deep passes. He's great. Just accuracy is sometimes a problem, especially on shorter throws. So a different profile. But him and like Jake Locker had similar profiles entering the NFL. One of them obviously did not take off, did not correct the accuracy issues, you know, and also suffered a number of injuries, was with a bad program with multiple OCs. The other took off and became one of the top quarterbacks in his conference.
Yeah.
And that didn't happen until he was a couple years in. Under the right offensive coordinator, under the right coach, with the right system, with the right weapons. Is that something you've seen quarterbacks be able to develop, or do you think you have a pretty good feel for, like, this guy's just not going
to
work?
You can develop it to a point. I think it has to be just part of you. I think if it is part of you, you have a bigger advantage. I've seen QBs add that to their game. Josh Allen, for example. When Josh Allen came in the league, everything was just so hard and on a line, and now we've seen him evolved, and now he has the touch passes. He uses his athleticism. So, yeah, it can be developed, but obviously you have a bigger advantage if you already got that in your game.
All right. We are going to take a look at another gambling scandal coming up in about 15 minutes. Before we do, let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, going inside the game with former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
First down bump, Daniel Jones, speaking of quarterbacks, says he's not concerned if the Giants draft a passer. Should he be?
Bruh.
I love the confidence.
Did you see his interview yesterday? People are talking about something was wrong with him. His eyes were so big, and he seemed a little wired up, a little fired up. I don't know what's going on.
I mean, maybe he's had as much caffeine as I have
today.
You never know.
Maybe. But if they draft a quarterback with the number 6 pick in the NFL draft, you best be concerned, son. They're not picking a quarterback at 6 to come in and support you. They're coming in to replace you.
Support you.
So now, and he might just be saying that for us because you know how the media is. We will run with whatever you give us, just like I'm running with this right now, okay? He needs to come in and say, if they pick a quarterback at six, it's going to be a competition. This is my job. Sometimes you just got to put your foot down. What was the situation? Ryan Tannehill. This is what I liked about him. They drafted a quarterback. He's like, I ain't there to help him. He's trying to take my job.
I actually did respect that.
Why would I help him? He's trying to take my job. Mm-hmm. That's not the situation that we're in. I think that that should be the mentality of Daniel Jones. It might be his mentality already.
Yeah.
He's just saying that to the public. But me personally, if I'm in his shoes, I'm making it known. Drake May, you show up, hey, it's a battle. Jaden Daniels, Michael Penix, whoever it is, if you show up, it's a battle. If they draft a quarterback in the second round at the 47th pick, okay, he's there to support you. They draft a quarterback in the third round with the 70th pick, okay, he's there to support you. The fourth with 107, he's there to support you. But number six, you don't waste draft picks on number six for guys to come in and support Daniel Jones, especially with the year that he had. Obviously, he's been injured. He's been banged up. But it hasn't worked out for him after he got his money. So, Daniel Jones, you make sure that I can't say what I want to say on air, but you do what you got to do. Let him know you the alpha in that thing. All right?
I have looked up the video of Daniel Jones that you talked about. He does look very intense. You know, here's the thing with him in this video. His face, and I don't mean this in a weird way, he's a handsome guy. His face lends itself to, like, if he opens up his eyes too wide, his brows just naturally are going to make him look very intense.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's the best way I can explain it.
Yeah.
I would probably do the same thing, actually.
Yeah. You know, some people's, you know.
Some people just have an intense look.
Yeah.
Like, just a look on their face that's a lot.
Yeah.
And
he's locked in right
he's
there.
He's really locked. He is locked in. He's locked. Capital L. Second down. Who's another international player you'll be keeping an eye on this preseason?
Man, I love that the game is growing. International players in Europe. You got the NFL, got a program going in Africa. And now we're going to Australia. Patrick Mertak, 6'6", 250 pounds. The Jaguars added him as an international player. He actually was on the Detroit Lions roster last year, but had to leave after a week for an undisclosed medical reason. I watched a film on this guy, and here's the thing about... He plays Australian rules rugby, whatever that means. Rugby looks like rugby to me. I don't know the specifics. But I watch him move. He's a big boy, 6'6", 250. They kick the ball to each other. So a lot of the highlights I saw were guys kicking it to him and him going up and grabbing the football out the air. So he got some hands. He can track the football, hand-eye coordination. My thing is the spin going to be different for him? Because when they kick the football, it's end over end. When you throw the football, it's in a spiral. Hands, you got hands, but it's going to be an adjustment. But I'm excited to just to see what he does. All right, I already talked about the guy that the Chiefs are going to have over there. I think he's going to be good, ready to go. Because he's a bigger guy and is going to be asked to block, to identify the box, to pull sometimes, maybe get in that sniffer position, he will be asked to do more than the young man from the Chiefs who's going to start off just as a returner and say, ball's in your hand. Go do what you've been doing since you were 5 years old. But I'm excited, man. I love that the game is growing. He was a decathlete as well, so we know that he's athletic. There's just so much strategy and technique when it comes to that tight end position. I think that it's going to take him a bit longer to excel than the guy over there with the Kansas City Chiefs. But, yeah, Patrick Mertak, 6'6", 250. Jaguars got him. He's a tight end. We'll see what he does. I'm excited.
I am excited to hear your answer to this question. Third down. What position is on pace to become the new roster killer?
All right, man. Right as we stand right now, people look at the quarterback position and say, that one can kill your roster. You can't win if your quarterback has 20% of your salary cap. We saw Pat Mahomes kind of dead there.
Can I guess?
Yeah.
Wide receiver.
Wide receiver all day. It's going to be wide receiver. And the reason why I thought about this is because I saw Justin Jefferson decline a $30 million a year deal with the Vikings. He wants more than $30 million a year. And I'm thinking, look, you got to pay your edge rushers, yeah. Right? They're getting the top guys are getting around $19 to $20 million a year. You got to pay your tackles. If you have a good defensive lineman, you have to pay him. Can you have a team where you have a Patrick Mahomes and a Justin Jefferson? It's going to be hard to do. Imagine if there was a Justin Jefferson with the Chiefs. You got to pay Patrick. You got to pay Justin. You got to pay Chris Jones. So then it got me thinking collective bargaining agreement. Right. When it comes down to negotiations, the players are getting 48% of the revenue right now. You got to push that to around 50. That's what kind of controls the salary cap and how much you're going to get paid. You got to get more of the TV money if you want to keep paying these guys these high numbers. For the first time in a while, I'm looking at the GMs and saying, your hands are tied right now. What do you do with a guy who wants $30 million a year yet you can draft a quarterback eventually. The Vikings, we assume they're going to move up. But then you're going to have to pay him. And by the time you got to pay him, Justin Jefferson might put together three more years where he's over 1,000 yards. He's going to want $50 million a year. It's getting crazy right now. How do you combat that? NFLPA, you got to ask for more money when it comes to revenue share. But it's going to be tough to get a superstar quarterback with a superstar wide receiver that is not a rookie but a veteran.
Guess 2024 wide receiver rankings. You don't have to guess in exact order, but just the top five cap hit for wide receivers. We have extra time.
Tyreek Hill.
Tyreek Hill is number one and the only player over 31. He's over 31 million, but the only wide receiver over 30 million in cap hit. Again, this is just cap hit, not base salary, not anything else.
Devontae Adams.
Yes, he's number five. 25.
DK Metcalf.
No.
Christian Kirk.
No.
Cooper Kupp.
Yes, he's number two at 29.7. I would not have guessed the other two.
Is it DJ Moore?
No.
All right, who are the two?
Chris Godwin.
Wow.
He's not franchise tagged. I don't know. Debo.
Debo, that makes sense.
Debo at 28. This is the cap hits right now. Once CeeDee Lamb gets paid, that's going to change. When Justin Jefferson gets paid, that's going to change. Mm-hmm. And also, who knows if any of these guys are going to have any kind of restructure.
They're going to restructure.
Some kind of something going on. Yeah. Who knows? But I don't know. That's what SpoTrack is giving me right now for 2024 cap hits alone.
Mm-hmm.
I would not have guessed Chris Godwin.
No, me neither.
Number four
Good
overall.
Good for you, though. I ain't mad at you.
Get the bag. Fourth down. What position should the Hawks absolutely stay away from in the draft?
Now, early in the draft, number 16.
Okay.
That's how I should have written that. But it's just a corner. You don't need a corner. And when you look at all these rankings when it comes to the best prospects and all the land, sometimes you got to get to page two before you see a corner. It's all offensive tackles. It is edge rushers. It's receivers. It's quarterbacks. The top corners ranked in this draft so far are Terrion Arnold out of Alabama. And you got Kool-Aid McKinstry. His parents must have loved him some Kool-Aid growing up. But, stay away from the corner. You don't need a corner. Any other position will make sense to me. And stay away from safety at number 16, too. I can throw that in there. At number 16, stay away from corner. Stay away from safety. I think you've done enough with free agents at that spot, that safety. And at corners, you got your guys. I'm not saying they won't grab a guy eventually in this draft. But there's no reason. There's no reason for us to hear the little bell or the little tune when it comes to the draft and them talking about the Seahawks that have drafted a corner. Stay away from them. I know they will. If they don't, I would be highly disappointed.
Someone said, I'd rather have three $10 million per year wide receivers rather than one $30 million per year. I would rather have Tyreek Hill or Justin Jefferson on my roster than just a dude.
Yeah.
I mean, you want Alan Lazard.
All you need is
Juju Smith-Schuster. And Brandon Cooks.
No, you need one.
Old Brandon Cooks.
One number one receiver, and then find some talent late in the draft at the other
guy.
Spots.
And then just a guy.
Yeah.
Some wild gambling allegations in the NBA. Plus, X.com makes a funny discovery about the 2021 sale of the Vegas Aces. That's coming up next.
This is The Timeline
with Bump and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
Timeline on Bump and Stacey, reading you the top stories you're going to see and hear about on your own timeline. Bump, why does it feel like there is always a gambling scandal? Always a gambling scandal, no matter what. A gam scam, if you will.
Didn't someone say this is going to become a bit more common?
Yes, Nick Wright had a question. Actually, no, that's too much to look up the audio.
Yeah, it was Nick Wright who said within the next 4 years there's going to be a major gambling scandal.
And that was, correct me if I'm wrong.
That was two gambling scandals ago.
That was two gam scams ago. Correct me if I'm wrong. That was after a bad call in a game, and he was implying that, look, it's not just that we could see players doing this or we could see people being threatened. It's that you could have a ref. You could have another what's-his-face situation. God, whistleblower documentary. What's his name? I always mess up his name.
Tim Donaghy,
a.k.a. maybe Tim Donahue. No one knows. this story is about Jontay Porter, who reportedly bet millions of dollars on a VIP FanDuel account. So there was already a report that Jontay Porter had been involved with sports betting, and the NBA was having an investigation. So he had already been put on leave, but we just have more details about it. He was reportedly a high roller at FanDuel, the betting partner of the NBA. The VIP betting section, I guess, is where you place really high bets. There's no indication that he placed bets over $1 million, but he was working with a ton of money. Again, he's under investigation, but has not appeared to be betting on NBA games. Adam Silver, commissioner of the NBA, has threatened a lifetime ban. This is my little critique, if I may be so bold, for Jontay Porter. His FanDuel account was in his name.
Come on, son. Come on, son. I bet he used his work email, too.
I'm just saying.
What you doing, dog?
Look, a minor critique, if we might. If you're going to do something that will get you banned from your league for life, don't leave the most obvious paper trail you possibly can.
Come on,
It is like robbing a bank and showing your ID when you walk in.
And here's a, I'm not justifying it, but okay. He's only getting paid $400,000 a year. In NBA terms, that's not a lot of money. He doesn't seem like a guy who's going to hang around for 10 to 12 years in this league anyway. So I'm putting myself in the mind of this young man, and he's thinking, look, I gotta sustain. How am I going to sustain this lifestyle of being an NBA player? I got to go ahead and do some illegal stuff. But you are right. You don't put the account in your name. Mm-hmm. You do not use your email. If anything, you get your little cousin, little Ray-Ray to get it done for you, and you go through him. But you shouldn't be doing that at all. Let me put that out there. Don't do that at all. But if you're going to do it, put more thought into it, dog.
So, again, while there was one source that said, like, hey, it doesn't, you know, he's saying he didn't bet on the NBA or there aren't reports that he did. There's not, like, pure findings that he did. The original report from ESPN and then a separate article from Awful Announcing highlight that there were unusual betting trends involving his own player props. So like how many points he would average in a game, how many threes he would average or whatever. So they mentioned one that said his under 0.5 three-pointers bet was the biggest money mover of the day after a January game against the Clippers where he played just 4 minutes and then left the game due to a reported eye injury without attempting a three at all. That's a little sus.
That's suspect for sure.
I mean, maybe you just happened to.
That's the smart part of this deal is that he was in control of the outcome of the bet. Right. So he was more willing to do what he did. That's the smart part. Everything else is dumb.
I can't get over him having it in his name. I really can't. Curtis, what was the thing that you said FanDuel stopped him from doing something, like actual FanDuel?
Yeah, FanDuel themselves stopped Jontay Porter from placing bets on college basketball and NBA games. So, like, when FanDuel is saying, hey,
buddy. The bartender has cut you off.
Yeah, I think you've got a problem here. That's when, you know, he's not. He's got a gambling.
Put an X on his hand.
Yeah.
Sticking with basketball, next story. 11 of the 12 spots on Team USA's 2024 Olympic basketball roster have reportedly been finalized. The 11 spots will go to, you guys can guess all the names.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Steph, Bron, KD, Jason Tatum, Joel Embiid, Devin Booker, Tyrese Halliburton, Anthony Edwards, Drew Holiday, Bam Adebayo, and Anthony Davis.
I'm just glad that Joel said, no viva la France. Okay.
Yeah, he's got French citizenship.
Yeah, he played for France in Olympics already. He goes, nah, man, I'm switching teams. I'm going to U.S. Now just get healthy, Joel, because we need you. Here's the scary part about this. All these names, right? Household names, we know them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still a little scared.
Why are you scared?
Luka's still out there.
Oh.
Joker's still out there. Well. Wembanyama's still out there. This ain't 1992. Where is it 92? 92
yeah,
Olympics.
That was a dream team, yeah.
It ain't 92. Well, we're playing against carpenters and stuff. The NBA
guys taking smoke breaks on the benches.
All right, NBA has grown, and that's the reason why the Lakers have the record that they have, and they're in the playing game because the league is that good right now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's gonna be tough, man. But I'm glad this is LeBron's last go around. You need him. You need Steph Curry. You need KD. I like this squad, but I'm just saying. It's gonna be tough.
Barely related. Do you guys remember when we were all covering the World Baseball Classic and the Czech Republic team became like the fan favorite because they had a team made up of like
electricians?
Like there was an actual substitute teacher.
Yep.
There was like a high school teacher, a firefighter, someone who worked in sales. And there was this really cool backstory as to like the evolution of baseball there and like how
didn't they win a game?
Yeah, well, they became a huge story because of it. And then obviously, given that they were firefighters and teachers, they did not continue winning. But it was a very cool story. And Yeah, WBC was awesome. Moving on. Blazers forward Delano Banton had a game to remember in all the wrong ways on Sunday. He set the NBA record for most missed three-pointers, 0 for 15, and then was ejected for a flagrant 2 foul.
Here's the
foul. That dude was swinging after he missed that much. He's like, someone's getting
someone has
it.
To pay for this.
Hey, I respect 0 for 15. You kept shooting. You kept shooting. He has no conscience.
You don't mean this
he
at
goes,
all.
He check. I'm trying to warm up. I looked up the most missed three-pointers.
Kobe.
Yeah, he got 0 for 10. It was like five more. I got him.
Hey, go forget it, man. I'm trying to hit a quota. I looked at the most missed three-pointers with a make. You got Harden at 16. You got Curry at 15. Kobe at 15. Without a make before that, it was Eric Gordon with 12 and Justin Anderson at 12. My man was on a mission. I respect that. That's resilience right there. That's saying, you know what? One of these got to go in. I respect it.
And they didn't. And that almost makes it more impressive. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Last story here. Roger Sherman has it. He says, I was curious. This is on X.com. I was curious about the WNBA team valuations, and I read that Mark Davis bought the Aces for a reported $2 million in 2021. Wildly successful team. Who sold for that cheap, I wondered. What idiot misread sports trends that badly? What rube failed to see the imminent women's sports boom? And I gotta say, LMAO. The name, friends, at the bottom of this one. George Kliavkov, president of entertainment and sports for MGM Resorts International. No. Oh, George.
Oh, this feels like this one hurts, man. Like, come on, George. You're embarrassing me, man.
You're embarrassing all of us.
Yeah. What are you doing, my guy?
He doesn't know when to hold them or fold them. That's the problem with George Kliavkov, is he sold
this team.
And he lives
in Vegas.
Yeah, sold this team way too soon then didn't sell the Pac-12 soon enough. Make up your mind. What are you going to do here?
He ain't who we thought he was. He ain't who we thought he was. He's supposed to save the pack. He's supposed to be all about marketing and business and all that stuff, man. But you know what? He still sleeps good at night. I'm sure his pockets are still fat. But you hurt a lot of people, George. Lots of people.
Talking draft coming up at noon. Plus, later in the show, as a reminder, it is Tuesday. It is Teal Tuesday, I'm sorry. And that also means that it's a dugout. So coming up at 1 p.m., it's all Mariners from 1 to 2. Shannon Dreyer is going to join us. Gary Hill is going to join us. Mariners pitching coach Pete Woodworth is going to join us. It's all coming your way next. Don't go anywhere.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
I was looking at Mina Kimes' Twitter account, which makes me sound like a stalker, but I always like looking to see, you know, fun videos that she posts, especially leading up to the draft. She always has really good debates and really great guests on her podcast. And I saw this debate and it made me think of a hypothetical situation that we could discuss, Bump. Mina said one of the most fascinating debates of the entire draft for her is how high can you draft Georgia tight end Brock Bowers? And I love that debate because Brock Bowers is an exceptional talent. He is a clear pro-ready day one starter kind of dude. And yet, Shiel Kapadia, credit for the stat, absolutely none of the 9 tight ends drafted in the first round in the last decade have had any all-pro nominations, and only one has had 1,000 yards in a season. So there's not been a lot of luck with first-round tight ends, yet how do you not take him at, like, number 10 if you're the Jets? That's not necessarily what we're going to talk about here. What we're going to do instead is, if you could see into the future for one 2024 NFL draft pick, whom would you choose?
If I could see.
I'll secretly let you have more than one.
All right. First one, Rome Odunze.
We got 10 minutes.
Rome.
That would be your number one choice?
That'd be my number one. Because I'm so invested in Rome. I've watched him torch my team for years. I've met the young man several times. I really like his game. And I think that he is in a draft class where his position is extremely deep. And he's getting overlooked. Like, I was listening to what Stephen A. and Shannon Sharp talk about the draft on the way up to work. And
you better not say they had neighbors.
They had neighbors, and they didn't even mention Rome Odunze. Marvin Harrison, they were talking about neighbors maybe being better than Marvin Harrison. And then they even threw in Brian Thomas as well. So I'm like, what about Rome? What about the 6'3", down-the-field threat that reminds everybody of, like, a Larry Fitzgerald, Keyshawn Johnson type of receiver? And I just think his game will last a long time. There's some receivers like Tyreek Hill. I want to see what his game looks like when the speed ain't there no more. Because that's the biggest part of his game. Now, he's put together a great career. My man going to play 10, 15 years if he wants to. But those type of players are the ones that I'm interested in seeing. It's almost like the someone asks me all the time. They go, who do you like better, Ronaldo or Messi? As a player, I like Messi better. But Messi's game is so reliant on his speed and his quickness that eventually he's going to die down. Ronaldo is reliant on his skill. He's going to hit you from 20 meters out and put the ball on goal.
And so, his cheekbones.
And that too, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so his game, to me, is going to last longer than Messi's game, even though I think Messi's greater than him.
It's a good analogy.
So that's how I look at receivers. I go, all right, well, Romeo isn't relying on just running by you. He is a route runner. He's got hands. He's got length. The ball skills are great. I want to see what his career ends up being, and I think he's going to have a solid career.
A very good explanation that makes sense. At first, I was like, Rome Odunze? I guess I just think like, he'll be fine. Like, he'll be just fine. I think that I went with the quarterbacks, and I had a hard time narrowing it down. And the reason I, in particular, went for quarterbacks is obviously they're the most important position. But I didn't go with Marvin Harrison because I think Marvin Harrison is going to be good. Mm-hmm. And I didn't go with Rome because I just assume he'll be the second best guy. And maybe that was wrong of me to not assume he'd be better than Marvin. I didn't go with Caleb Williams because I'm thinking of it like a Trevor Lawrence situation where it's like, yeah, he's probably going to get a second contract in 4 years. They're not going to get that fifth year. They're going to just give him an extension. Like, everyone thinks he's going to be great. It's a huge investment for Chicago. They're not going to move on. I don't know if he's going to live up to expectation. Few passers and players ever do. I am more interested in the guys that are not supposed to be as good as the guys taken in front of them, like a Michael Penix. And I know we went with two Huskies here. Go figure. We're a Seattle sports station. But what if Michael Penix or Bo Nix or, God, like a, I don't think this is going to happen, but we talked about like Travis Jordan, a couple other like day three guys. Mm-hmm. What if those guys end up being great? I am being heavily influenced by Brock Purdy with San Francisco, and I recognize that.
Right.
But there are other quarterbacks taken on day two, Brett Favre. Later picks, I mean, you have Drew Brees, Tom Brady, the most obvious one, but Dak Prescott, Russell Wilson. Like, there have been, Romo, I think, there have been guys taken late in the draft, fewer who were undrafted, but still there, who became great and you never could have predicted it. And I would love to know which of these passers will be that guy, because you know it's there. You know that they will not have 1 through 5 or 6, wherever they're drafted, as the ranking of their success. There will be someone who disappoints and is a bust, and there will be someone who surprises and is a complete bargain.
Yep. And then there's someone who's going to be exactly who you think they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the thing with quarterbacks. They are the most analyzed quarterback. I mean, positions for a reason, right? They could change the trajectory of an organization. They are the face of the NFL. They're the face of the game. They hold the most responsibility. So we nitpick everything that these guys do. But you're right. There's going to be a surprise. Mm-hmm. There's going to be someone who lives up. There's going to be someone who underachieves. Who is it going to be? I think Caleb Williams is going to have a good career.
Yeah.
I think he need obviously number one pick. It's not obvious, right? You have number one picks that flop all the time. But I just look at the way the game is and the way that he plays is exactly what people are looking for. And he's got to work on some things. He does hold the football. You're not going to be able to do that the way you do in college football. But I just look at just the way he throws, his arm slots, his balance, his athletic ability. I go, this is what everybody is looking for in the NFL. So, I think that's a good pick. I like that.
I'm looking at a couple other names. Let me know if this is someone where you'd be like, yes, I would be fascinated to know. At the top are ones that are really obvious. Jaden Daniels.
Yeah.
Drake May. I want to know if he's a bust.
You know, I think Drake's going to be fine, but I don't think he's going to be great.
You think he's going to be Mac Jones, ironically taken by the Patriots?
Maybe. But the one I'm questioning is Jaden Daniels.
Oh, Jaden.
Jaden Daniels. Like, all right, you had one good year over there with LSU. You had two receivers who are going to be drafted in the top 10, top 15. LSU did not have the toughest schedule in all the land. You weren't able to do much with a little at Arizona State. Then you get everything you do what you're supposed to do. So, again, everyone has a chance to be great, but I'm looking at him and saying, all right, let's see. This kid I'm going to mention is my like Tank Dell of the draft.
Okay.
Last year, Merrill was talking about Tank Dell. Yeah. I like this
and
dude.
And he took off for
and
Houston.
And boom, I'm looking at Malachi Corley from Western Kentucky. He's a receiver. 7-9 receptions, 984, and 11 touchdowns. Route runner, hands, speed. I really like this dude. I think he could be a guy who exceeds expectations. Only ran a 4.46. I say only. Back in my day, that was blazing, right? Only ran a 4.46. But I think that if he's in the right system, he could be that slot, maybe move him outside every now and then guy to make some noise. So remember this name, Malachi Corley. See who picks him up.
Wow, there's so much good offensive talent in this class. Absolutely unbelievable. Where would Brock Bowers be on your list? I think he's the – I think I'd choose curiosity over him over maybe Bo Nix.
You know what's funny about Brock is – he's been banged up. Mm-hmm. No one talks about that. Mm-hmm. Michael Penix banged up. Everybody talks about that. Peyton Wilson banged up. No one talks about that. I understand that Penix is a quarterback and he has more responsibility, but if we're going to talk about injuries, right, you got to talk about injuries at positions where guys are out in the field and they're making moves and running full speed and doing all this other stuff. I just don't think it's fair sometimes the way that Penix is, they're holding that against him. I think you can't ignore it, but do that for everybody else. Brock, I think, is going to be fine, though.
I think
he's going to be a premier guy. Yeah, I don't think he gets to number 16 at all.
No, but it's a really, really good point about, like, this guy's had multiple surgeries as well.
Yep.
Quarterback is obviously a bigger investment in theory, but taking a guy at number 10 absolutely is as well. Good point. All right, we're going to stick with the NFL. Let's bring on an expert, though. The Athletic NFL draft analyst Dane Brugler joins us next. He is going to have a 7-round mock coming out tomorrow. Let's ask him if he's got any quarterbacks going to Seattle and who he's got at pick number 16. That's next.